Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Republican Chris Roebling, Democrat Bob Cramer, and Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics, and final background reports from Iowa, New Hampshire, Virginia, Wisconsin, Colorado, and Ohio. Good evening, everyone. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Our phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, it's www.beyondthebeltway.com. Everybody listening out there in Radio Land, I think you've heard me say that this is also a television show in Chicago. So to those watching this on television, again, in reference to the bandage on my face, I told you a couple of weeks ago, I underwent some skin cancer treatments. All the cancer is gone, but I'm left with a little scar and a Band-Aid. And so you may see this for a couple of weeks. But we move on to the more important issue, and that is who is going to be the next president of the United States for the next 4 years. And we have a Republican, we have a Democrat, and we have one of the foremost observers of the political scene with us this evening. And let me begin with him. That's Tom Bevin. He is the founder, co-founder of Real Clear Politics, which was an idea you had many, many years ago, and you've done a phenomenal job in making it the go-to place. There was about 9 references on the networks today, so congratulations.
Thank you very much.
My first question to you is, because you're following this, there's been a lot of buzz in the last 72 hours about Pennsylvania. Is Pennsylvania really up for play?
Well, I mean, if you believe the polling data, yes. I mean, we had a poll come out showing the race tied. We had another call, the morning call tracking poll, which had Obama up 5 yesterday. It moved its squeeze down to 3 today. So Democrats say it's not. Republicans think that it is. And one of the reasons they think that it is because there's no early voting in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania also hasn't been part of the sort of the firewall. Obama hasn't spent a bunch of money there supporting him. So,
Chris Roebling, let me ask you, when you hear the discussions about Pennsylvania, does that signal to you that the Romney folks think that Ohio is gone for them?
Oh, no. I think that this is a classic case of expanding the map. What you see in Pennsylvania with a variety of polls indicating in sort of an even race or certainly well within the margin of error race is another expression of momentum and direction and trend. Okay, so the traditionally throughout the last 8, 10, 12 weeks of the election, Obama has been maybe 5 to 8 points ahead of Romney in Pennsylvania. Well, as those things for Romney to get ahead and to finish first, they've got to go through this period of statistical tie and even before he moves ahead. I think Pennsylvania is going to be in the Republican column on Tuesday night.
That's your spin. Bob Cramer is our Democrat. Bob, do you believe that Pennsylvania is in play? And if not, why is everybody focusing on it now?
I think it's a real long shot for the Republicans. This is a sign of desperation. I mean, there are very few paths to them to get to 270 votes. Mm-hmm. Of the 21 polls that were done yesterday in battleground states, the president was ahead in 16, 3 were tied, and 2 showed Romney ahead in any of these states. I mean, right
but
now—
But all within the margin of error in virtually every one, correct?
Not all, but most. That's true. Because okay. These are very—I mean, the race is very close in the sense of the division of the country. But, you know, all the average for polls in Pennsylvania does not have the Romney coming on. In fact, we don't see Romney coming on anywhere in the United States in general.
Real Clear Politics sort of introduced the idea of averaging the polls. And again, everyone is starting to do that now. Tom, so you're looking at a methodology of the national polling, the sort of the brand names of polling, and then you're dealing with, let's say, 50 states of you know, polling is done by newspapers or television stations, a little bit different. Does that methodology, is it really significantly different?
Between what?
Between the way that the national polls would do it, the Gallup folks, and right. The way that it would be done by, let's say, a local newspaper in Ohio.
No, I mean, again, polling is sort of more art than science, actually. It depends on, you know, what questions are asked, what order those questions are asked in, you know, and most importantly, what the pollster assumes the electorate is going to look like on Tuesday, whether you think it's going to be a, you know, D plus seven electorate, a D plus four electorate. And that's where a lot of the contention has come in. A lot of the Republicans are arguing that these polls are sort of projecting an electorate that's going to be better for Obama than it actually is. Now, we don't – that's something that's sort of unknowable. And certainly I think, you know, in some of these states, you have a different set of pollsters. At the national level, you know, you go back, you've had Gallup there since 1952. You've had, you know, Rasmussen has been there for a number of cycles. All of the big names, you know, ABC, Washington Post, NBC, Wall Street Journal. We have some different players at the state level, PPP, which is a, you know, robo-calling firm, some of these other sort of newer firms that are involved in polling at state level. So it's just a different group.
Well, it's also going to come down to turnout, and I want to talk about turnout. And obviously a couple of weeks ago I talked about yard signs. I saw very few of them in Ohio. You know, I wrote that off, that everybody's putting their money in into television. But also there was so much written several years or 4 years ago about the crowds. Yesterday the vice president drew 900 people, the president 2,800 people, and Romney is drawing 17,000 people in Ohio.
Oh.
I mean, what
Bruce.
Does –
You got to compare oranges, apples to oranges here. I mean, in the same kind of venues,
2,800 for the president.
The president is in the same kind of time slots and venues. The president has been drawing enormous crowds. I think you're going to see over the next 2 days the president having huge crowds in lots of locations. But
are you arguing that the enthusiasm is as high today as it was 4 years ago?
I think it's very high.
And by the way, it was 4 years ago today that Barack Obama was elected.
Yeah, I think it's very high, and number one. And number two, I think we will see that the Obama campaign has the best field operation in the history of American politics.
I'm going to respectfully disagree with my friend Bob Cramer here. I think that the ground game of the Obama operation was very impressive 4 years ago, as was the messaging, as was the entire campaign. There's no question about
perfect
it.
Perfect campaign.
It was close to a perfect campaign, close to. I believe that there isn't an advantage. I don't think that – I do not concede to the Obama campaign an advantage on so-called ground game, which we used to refer to as GOTV, get out the vote. And the evidence that I'm citing is Wisconsin. And I've mentioned this before in the program, but just very quickly, everything that the Democrats had was thrown at Scott Walker up in Wisconsin in June. Scott Walker not only survived, he expanded his tally from the time that he was elected. And I think that that program, I know that that program has been templated and moved out to all of the states that we're talking about tonight. So I think you've got a first-class get-out-the-vote operation or ground game on the Republican side. And I think there is an enthusiasm gap, and I don't expect Bob to agree with that, but there is an enthusiasm gap on the Democratic side, or you wouldn't see the very significant differences in early voting tallies between Republicans and Democrats in Ohio.
Well, the early voting tallies, I mean, have us up by huge margins in most of these states among people who've already voted. I mean, and I think that's going to continue through today.
But not compared to 4 years ago. By the way, we do have to pause on that point. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, what we're going to do for the rest of the broadcast this evening, each quarter hour, we're going to be focusing on a specific one of the six states that our guests suggest are going to decide who is going to lead the country for the next 4 years. When we come back, we're going to head to where it all began, in Iowa. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. Joining us now from Iowa is Kay Henderson. She is a veteran reporter for Radio Iowa. Kay, nice to have you back with us on Beyond the Beltway.
Good evening.
I would like to begin by asking you to give us sort of a summary of where the polls are at the moment, how early voting is going in Iowa, and just sort of set the scene for us this Sunday before election.
The Des Moines Register issued its Iowa poll this weekend. It found that Barack Obama had the support of 47% of people polled. Mitt Romney had the support of 42%. 5% of the people that they polled refused to say who they were supporting, and another 2% said they were still undecided. The most interesting thing about that poll is it gives us a better idea of early voting. 42% of the people who responded to that poll said they had already voted. I went to Mitt Romney's rally here in Des Moines this morning, and Romney asked the crowd, how many of you voted? And I would say fully half of the people in the room raised their hand. That's uncharacteristic for Republicans. Republicans tend to be vote on election day people, but Republicans in Iowa have really sort of dug in and embraced early voting in a way that they hadn't.
I think, by the way, that's going to be one of the big stories when we analyze this election. You're going to see that in states all over the country where it does take place. The Museum of Broadcast Communications itself in downtown Chicago was an early voting site. Every single day they increased the record, and it was record turnout. People waiting in the line around the block to get in.
And it complicates, we were talking earlier about the methodology of polling, it complicates the exit poll methodology.
Oh, big time.
Because the people who are voting on Election Day this time round, state by state, but nationally, will be about 75% of the people who are voting. 25%, this will be the single largest number of non-in-precinct votes ever in American history.
Kay, to go back to a question, last week on this program we had a senior vice president of Edison Research, and he identified Iowa of all the networks we're talking about, eight or nine toss-up states. He was the one that identified Iowa as one of the absolute, the super six that are going to decide this. Are you surprised that it is still this close and this contested at this point in the campaign? Because the people in Iowa have had more politics shoved down their throat than any state in the union.
Indeed they have. Let me give you a statistic that I think will maybe shock folks. On November 1st, there were 628,000 or so registered Republicans in Iowa. There were 627,000 registered Democrats in Iowa. Republicans hold just a 1,400 voter registration edge in Iowa. That is huge. In June, Republicans had held a 21,000 voter registration edge in Iowa. In 2008, when Barack Obama first ran here on caucus night, they had a huge turnout. A lot of new Democratic voters were taken to the polls, signed up to vote, and Democrats racked up huge gains here. In fact, at one time in 2008, they had a 110,000 vote advantage over Republicans in this state. Republicans erased that and surged ahead this summer, and Democrats have been able to eat away at that, especially through early voting. A lot of the people that they've gotten to vote, especially in the past 10 days, have been brand new voters.
Kay, Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics is here. He has a question for you.
Hi, Kay. I just want to, excuse me, this may be an unfair question, but obviously in the final 48 hours here, there's a lot of talk about momentum. I mean, do you feel, sense anything being there on the ground? Has Obama sort of edged ahead? Or do you feel like, you know, who has the momentum, I guess, heading into Election Day?
It sort of feels like one of those old state fair gigs where they had two trains racing at one another and there was going to be a crash and you would sort of see who would survive. That's sort of what it feels like to me. I was in Dubuque where both Romney and Obama campaigned on Saturday. Tried to talk to people in town about a day ahead of time. A lot of people are just done with this. A lot of people, as we already mentioned, have already voted, and they already voted because then they're able to tell those people who are calling them during the dinner hour that, you know, I've already voted, leave me alone. So there is sort of a threshold here where people are ready to have this election over. But, you know, if you look at the vote tally in 2000, Al Gore and George Bush here in Iowa, Gore won this state by only 4,000 votes. That's about two votes per precinct. In 2004, George W. Bush won the state by about 10,000 votes. I think we're back into that cycle where Iowa is just one of those incredibly purple states, And frankly, one of the reasons that we may be a purple state is because of the caucuses. Because of the caucuses, you have a ground game here on the part of Republicans and Democrats that is far superior to what it would be if they didn't have that run through, that sort of exercise.
Last week on this program, one of our topics of discussion was the Des Moines Register, which that day had endorsed Mitt Romney. Mm-hmm. It's a traditionally Democratic paper. To what extent, even though many of Iowans had already voted, to what extent did that get everyone's attention? And do you think that that endorsement, being a statewide paper, has had much sway?
Well, it certainly got Mitt Romney's attention. He's been running television ads in Iowa to relate to Iowans that he has won the endorsement of the Des Moines Register. So it's the first time, as you probably mentioned last weekend, in 40 years that the Register right. has endorsed a Republican candidate. So it was a topic of conversation. I don't know that people base their voting decision on what the opinion page of the Des Moines Register or any newspaper for that matter. It just sort of kept the idea that this is a very competitive race here and that neither one of these candidates has it sewn up.
I think it was not only sort of shocking that they did it, but also the sort of the tone of the editorial was sort of a theme of buyer's remorse. And the New York Daily News is also a paper that is traditionally a liberal Democratic paper. They, too, endorsed Mitt Romney today. Bob Creamer, our Democrats got a question.
Just a quick question, Kay, then. I mean, 538.com and the New York Times predicts with that 83% odds that the Iowa will go Democratic. I mean, all of the polls, the state battleground polls, all of them in the last number of days have had the president ahead, even though the prediction here is about, at least 538 predicts about a 3-point spread in the end, a durable but small lead. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not close. I mean, I guess it's marginally close, but it's not close from the point of view of its likelihood.
And here is how we Republicans are viewing this. In Iowa, the latest thing that I saw at Real Clear Politics, no plug intended here.
Why not?
Was 47.8 for Obama. 47.8. Now, one thing I'd note is that went down to 47 in the Des Moines Register poll. But let's not quibble. 47.8 is a classic Obama tally at this point. And I'm taking the position, I think that the Romney organization is taking the position, that A, Romney's right up there at 47. He's right in that neighborhood. And B, there are undecideds who are not going to be breaking to Obama at this point because they've had every opportunity to do so. So any place where you see Obama at 47%, we're looking at that as a strong state for the final tally.
Kay, a question to you. In Iowa, what are the third-party options in the state, and could they be the difference between victory or defeat for one of the two major parties?
There really is not a third-party outlet, if you will, for people to cast their vote. But with this caveat, Ron Paul really got a lot of excited new people involved in the Republican Party. I don't know whether they will cast their vote for the Libertarian candidate because they are so much a supporter of Ron Paul and wish his name were on the ballot. But they might just not vote in the presidential race. They're a small portion of the Republican electorate, but if it's a narrow, narrow victory, that could be, a margin that would be beneficial to Obama rather than to Romney.
Now, sometimes when people are voting on Election Day, even though it's a specific office, a national office like president, sometimes people get all riled up and get their shorts in a knot because they've got some animosity against a governor or a state senator. So in that state, you have a Republican governor, Terry Branstad. Is he popular, and is there any help that he's either giving to the Romney campaign, or perhaps is he maybe viewed as a negative to some extent?
Well, Terry Branstad has been appearing at Romney and Ryan rallies here and giving a very impassioned plea for votes for these people. I would point out, though, that in the middle of October, after he took a two week vacation to Norway, Terry Branstad had a fundraiser for himself for 2014. So he's not been terribly laser-like focused on the Romney campaign. The thing on the ballot that I think
we've got about 15 seconds left, Kay.
There's a judge race here in Iowa that has a lot of Republicans energized because it's a judge that signed on to the 2009 ruling that legalized gay marriage. And there will be a lot of Republicans who vote on that issue, and Romney will benefit from that.
Okay. On that note, we want to thank you very much. That's Kay Henderson. She's with Radio Iowa giving us an update on what is happening in the Hawkeye State. When we come back, we're going to head to New Hampshire. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and just like the political calendar, we move from Iowa to New Hampshire, and joining us now is Dan Pierce. He's the general manager and the morning man for WNTK. That's in New London, New Hampshire. That's one of our oldest affiliates on the Beyond the Beltway network. And Dan, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway tonight.
Well, it's great to be with you, Bruce. Thanks very much for inviting me to be on the show.
Let me ask you the same question I asked our previous guest, and that is, at this moment in time, can you sort of set the scene in New Hampshire? What does your gut tell you what's happening there? And also, I understand, is it Romney or is it the president that's going to make one stop there before the campaign is over?
Well, yeah, Mitt Romney is scheduled to make another stop. He's supposed to be in Manchester. Actually, Kid Rock will be playing at the Verizon Wireless Arena in Manchester at a Romney rally tomorrow. Both of these men have been in New Hampshire multiple times over the last couple of weeks. Both of their spouses have been here. Vice President Biden's been here several times. They, of course, have surrogates coming to the states every single day. We are definitely a battleground state. The latest polling, Bruce, I saw just a few moments ago, public policy has it by Obama by 2 points, 50-48. But our own UNH, University of New Hampshire Survey Center poll, has it exactly 48-48, a dead tie. And most everybody that I know that follows politics in New Hampshire, and I've been following it for almost 20 years, believes that it's just about a tie, although my gut, Bruce, tells me that independents and late deciders are breaking towards Romney. So I wouldn't be surprised if Mitt Romney won the state of New Hampshire by a point or two on election night.
I asked this question of our reporter from Iowa. New Hampshire people, they've had politics crammed down their throat for almost 2 years now. Is there a mood that people can't wait to get this thing over, or is there genuine enthusiasm for either of the candidates?
Well, Bruce, I was going to start the phone conversation by saying, thank God Tuesday is coming in just 48 hours, because I know, like everybody else that lives here, my phone has been ringing off the hook. Today, we had a half dozen calls, several I could tell. I have caller ID like many people do nowadays, and it comes up on my television screen. And I can tell by the calls that some of them are pollsters, but today a number of them I knew were get-out-the-vote calls. We're tired of it. It's wall-to-wall political advertising on my own radio show, wall-to-wall political advertising. So everybody's tired of that. But I think people are enthusiastic about voting because I think most New Hampshire residents understand that this is a very important election. Certainly the folks that are in favor of the president are very much of the understanding that they have a particular philosophy that needs to be put forward. But those that are opposed to the president and his policies do as well. And again, my gut tells me that their enthusiasm is just a little bit more than the president's enthusiasm. And Bruce, I have no scientific evidence to back that up. It's just my gut telling me that.
But again, we should mention that that New London, New Hampshire is near Lebanon, which is near Hanover, which is the site of Dartmouth College. And Dartmouth, obviously, is one of the hotbeds of political activity at the college level. A question also about just the general issues. Is there one particular or two issues that seem to have the attention of most of the voters there?
Well, I think it's the same as the rest of the country. It's jobs and the economy. New Hampshire is doing a little bit better than the rest of the country in terms of unemployment. Our unemployment rate's about 5.7% or so, which is below the national average. Our economy is doing a bit better than the rest of the country, but it does seem to be in a holding pattern. And when I talk to voters all the time, of course, doing a radio show, I take calls and I go out in the community and talk to folks in the community, and they talk about business. Business is slow. Things are not moving. Investors are sitting on their money. People are waiting to see what's going to happen next. Those that believe the president's policies need to go forward believe we just need to persevere. Those that are opposed to the president's policies believe those policies are wrong and we need to change course. So I think it's very much, despite the fact that the demographics of New Hampshire are different than the rest of the country, like Iowa, we're an overwhelmingly white state, we're ethnically homogenous. But I think that like many other places in the country, and like the polls show, the national polls, jobs in the economy, that's number one. And then debt and deficit really are number two in terms of the issues that people are concerned about. $1 trillion a year added to the debt over the last 4 or 5 years, that concerns most people. And New Hampshire's got a reputation well-deserved as a very fiscally conservative state.
Dan, we've got Bob. Bob Creamer's our Democrat. He wants to jump in with a question or comment.
Sure.
A quick note. I mean, though the UNH poll he indicated was tied, that's kind of the only one that was tied of the last five. The rest of them have been.
I thought WMUR today had things tied. Did they not?
That's the same poll.
The rest of them have Obama ahead, and in this case again, I think the Obama folks feel pretty confident about New Hampshire. Wonderful ground game there. Nate Silver's 538 gives it a 79% odds of going Democratic.
Well, Real Clear has got it at 50.5% for Obama.
As the spread, you mean?
What
does
it
as
say?
The ultimate spread. That's right. And that I think is about right.
I want to get a reaction from Chris, our Republican, and then I'll let everybody weigh in. And I want to get Tom and then also Dan's response. What does it say about that Mitt Romney is ending his campaign with a rally in New Hampshire?
Well, I think he's going after the 4 or 6 electoral votes of New Hampshire. I mean, I think what you're talking about here is what the Romney campaign is good at is managing resources. Okay, and they have managed the time of the candidate, and he is getting to Pennsylvania. He's doing an artful job of getting around to these states in the closing days. I think all these states are very much in play, and I think that New Hampshire could go. I am listening very attentively to what's being said, to Dan's report. I think there is an enthusiasm gap, and I think people are coming over to Romney. But the last 10 days have not been favorable for Romney because of Hurricane Sandy.
Tom Bevin.
Well, look, I mean, I think New Hampshire's it's very, very close. We do have even the PPP poll that came out tonight shows it a 2-point race. I mean, all that's all within the margin of error. So the fact that Romney's ending his campaign, it's one of his 3 home states. It's where he started his campaign. It's where he's going to end his campaign. So I think there's some symbolism there. And I think, you know, if you work through the Electoral College analysis, there are a number of scenarios in which New Hampshire proves to be decisive.
Right. Mm-hmm. One last question about spending. I assume things have been it's been a good last 3 months for the radio station with ads.
Well, of course. I mean, in fact, outside groups have been spending a tremendous amount of money. In fact, in our local races for governor and Congress, outside groups have been outspending the candidates because of the interest in this state as a swing state. I would say one thing about the polls. The UNH poll, which is the same as the Channel 9 WMUR poll, 3 weeks ago had Obama up 15. A week and a half ago had Obama up 9. The other day it has Obama and Romney tied. And it has Romney winning independents by a large margin over President Obama. And that's why my gut tells me that the momentum is moving towards Mitt Romney, and that at the end of the day, at the end of the night, tomorrow night, it won't be by a lot, but I think Mitt Romney will carry New Hampshire by a couple of points.
Is there a third part? What are the third party options in New Hampshire?
Not much. I mean, there is a Libertarian Party in New Hampshire. The Libertarians typically field candidates. They have a candidate for governor who actually lives in the area where my radio station is located, and he's a great guy, but he's only going to get a couple of points. And Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate for president, will get a point or two, but I don't think it'll matter.
Mm-hmm. Listen, Dan, thank you very much for being with us, the morning man and the general manager of WNTK in New London, New Hampshire, offering with a New Hampshire report. Let's go to a call from someone listening in Minneapolis, St. Paul this evening, and that's Grant. He's listening to us on Sirius XM Radio. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, so we're talking about limited campaign resources, and I just noticed that Paul Ryan is here in Minnesota, and then I got a note from the Republican Party. because I've get notes from them, and they said that a poll of the American Future Fund said that Romney's up 46-45. So I just wanted to hear from your guests if they think that Minnesota is actually in play.
Chris Roebling.
Well, I think Minnesota got onto the radar screen because the Minneapolis-St. Paul Twin Cities market serves northwestern Wisconsin. And Wisconsin is very clearly a battleground state. That then increased some of the numbers. But you've also got something going on in Minnesota relative to a, and you can tell me, I think there's a ballot initiative up there about gay marriage or something. And
yeah,
that is bringing out.
There's two ballot initiatives. There's one that's going to put photo ID requirement for voting, and then the second one is, yeah, there's a proposal to ban gay marriage.
Okay, so the gay marriage proposal is bringing out every evangelical voter in Minnesota. And I think what you have here is, not to say a silent majority as in the Nixonian era, but you've got these categories of voters who I think are going to turn out in ways that have never been seen before. Catholics are still upset over the so-called war on the Catholic Church. The evangelicals are very upset about President Obama switching into support on the gay issue. And I think you're going to see some people on the guns and on taxes. You are not. This will be an election in which everyone who is feeling that way, everyone who's got a predetermined position on guns or a predetermined position on spending or on taxes, or on pro-life, pro-choice. These people are all coming out.
I'm glad to see you guys talking about Minnesota, because I think that will set a fire under all the folks in Minnesota who want to make sure that the president wins. And I would be, I'll be honest, just shocked if the president doesn't win Minnesota. Axelrod said something about Pennsylvania. He'd shave off his mustache. I'm sure I could think of something.
But Bob, you've written books about how to win elections.
Yeah.
Scaring the bejesus out of voters by thinking it's close, that's important.
It is important.
So all the times reported about close races, it helps everybody's turnout.
Well, it is important. And one of the reasons the Romney campaign has been pushing this notion of momentum is so that its base does not become dispirited.
When we come back, we're going to head to Virginia. Don't go away. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289. Each segment of our broadcast this evening, we are reaching out to one of the six identified swing states. We now head to the Commonwealth of Virginia, where Julian Walker joins us. He is a veteran reporter for the Virginian Pilot in Richmond, Virginia. Julian, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway.
Thanks for having me this evening.
Let me begin by asking you, as I have done the other guests this evening, sort of set the scene. What's happening in the state of Virginia at the moment? Who's got momentum? Update on some of the most significant polls that could determine who wins that state come Tuesday night.
Well, Virginia is, as you mentioned, in the toss-up category or the swing state category. It's somewhat new territory for Virginia. Virginia has had a long history of voting for Republicans in presidential contests. In fact, when Barack Obama won Virginia in 2008, it broke a 44-year streak of Virginia going in the red column. This time around, the most recent polls show a virtual tie race or a virtual toss-up. You've had several polls done in the last week and a half. A couple of those polls, one by Rasmussen and another one by Roanoke College, a Virginia institution, had Governor Romney up. A couple other polls, one by Quinnipiac, another by the Washington Post, had President Obama up. So, and then you had two other polls that showed a tie race. So it is about as close as it gets. Depending on your partisan persuasion, I guess you could find encouraging signs in some of the polls that have been released in the last couple of days.
Now, really, as I understand it, the Commonwealth is divided. Really, it's almost divided into half in that you've got the northern Virginia area, which has heavy vote-rich, and then you have the more conservative rural areas and other parts of the state. Is that a fair assessment of the geography of the state, and what can you tell us about early voting in either of those regions?
Look, a couple things. Think of Virginia. Virginia's kind of shaped like a shoe, if you will. The kind of urban areas in Virginia are what they call kind of the urban or the golden crescent, which spans Northern Virginia, as you mentioned, which is a very vote-rich area, as you point out. That is kind of the D.C. suburbs. It kind of arcs down through Central Virginia and into the Richmond market and some of the suburban communities around Richmond, the state capital, and then it heads eastward into the Hampton Roads or Tidewater region, which are the localities like Norfolk, Virginia Beach, Portsmouth, Chesapeake, Suffolk, that are along the eastern seaboard. Those are the areas in those communities which have kind of the most densely populated areas are the places where Democrats would look to do well. The rest of the state, kind of west beyond Richmond, that is kind of the more, there's many rural areas in Virginia, but that's kind of more the more rural and more Republican-leaning areas. As far as early voting is concerned, Virginia is a state that does not have what you would consider true early voting. Virginia has early absentee voting, but only for those voters who meet certain qualifications. There's a list of about 11 or so criteria, things like not going to be present at your polling location on the day of the election, a number of other things, disability. There are a number of categories, but those are the only people who are eligible to vote early absentee. And one other thing is that you should bear in mind, Virginia is not a state where people register by party identification. So while we know some things about where people are turning out for early voting, early absentee voting, it's kind of hard to discern exactly how that's breaking down simply because people aren't registered by party affiliation.
Historically, Julian, also, as you know, historically, Virginia is one of the first states to report on election night, along with Kentucky, sometimes Pennsylvania, although Pennsylvania might be a little bit tougher to call this year. So I think we will know early in the night about Virginia, and I think certainly the turnout in Northern Virginia is going to be something that, at least I know John King on CNN has said that's one of the areas he's going to be looking at to determine whether or not, you know, where Virginia goes early on. Chris Roebling, our Republican, has a comment or question for you.
What's the dynamic between this very close presidential race and your very close race for the U.S. Senate, which pits two former governors, both of whom have big ties to Chicago? But what's the dynamic? How is one race influencing the other, if at all?
Well, certainly the Senate race that you referred to, it's two former governors, as you note. The Republican is George Allen, who is a former governor, also a former U.S. senator, and a former congressman, against Tim Kaine, the Democrat, who's the former governor, more recently the governor, and was chairman of the Democratic National Committee in the first year or so of the Obama presidency. Republicans have sought to link Governor Kaine to his kind of close ties to Barack Obama, calling him in several ads cheerleader for the president and his agenda. So Republicans have tried to kind of make that association to try to tarnish Tim Kaine. What the polling has shown throughout in this race, for much of the race, it's been kind of neck and neck, a dead heat. Perhaps in the last week and a half, maybe 2 weeks, there have been a couple polls that have suggested that perhaps the Democrat Tim Kaine is inching ahead. From what I hear and from people I've talked to on the ground, it seems like you're more likely to have some split-ticket voters who, and I think even Republicans would acknowledge this, you might have some Romney-Kaine voters in Virginia, but most people think that the number of Obama-Allen voters would be minimal, if at all. So,
Julian, we've only got about 15 seconds left. Can you give us a sense of if there is momentum, and if so, for whom in your state?
That's hard to say. Both sides would claim that they have it. Both sides have very significant entrenched ground game operations. It really all boils down to voter turnout. Who can get out there and vote on election day?
Okay, so you're not going to make a call. You're not going to go out on a limb.
That's not my job. My job is just to observe, not to prognosticate.
All right, listen, thank you very much for being with us. That's Julian Walker. We're from the Virginian Pilot, reporting from Virginia. Tom Bevan, you've got to leave in a little bit. But again, closing words from you as to this campaign. People will follow your comments later on. You follow us every Sunday night on WLS Radio. But closing words to you.
Well, just as we talk through some of these states, I mean, in a lot of respects, to keep it simple, I mean, it's you know, Obama's lost about, he won last time by, I think, 7.3%. He's now tied or maybe just slightly ahead in our national polls. And you look, if he's fallen that far in a lot of these states, that's why Romney's ahead in Florida. That's why Romney's ahead in edge-to-head North Carolina. And that's why, you know, we talk about states like Minnesota and some of these other ones. They're going to be close. The question is whether they will. He will fall far enough to let the Republicans go ahead.
That's Tom Bevin, co-founder of RealClearPolitics.com, follows us every Sunday night on WLS. When we come back, we've got a lot more states to deal with. If you're watching us on television, you can only imagine what we're talking about. But go to our website, BeyondTheBeltway.com, and we will feed you what we're about to talk about. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Republican Chris Roebling, Democrat Bob Cramer, and I am Bruce Dumont. Thanks very much for joining us live from the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. And during our commercial break, CNN announced a new poll from ORC. It has the presidential race nationally tied at 49 even. 49-49. And what we've been doing this evening is, in each of our quarter hours, we have been going to one of the six identified toss-up states, and we now head north to Wisconsin, and we are joined by Craig Gilbert. He's the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and certainly Wisconsin is one of the hotly contested races this coming Tuesday. Craig, nice to have you back with us on Beyond the Beltway.
Always a pleasure.
Set the scene for us in Wisconsin. What are the latest polls? What's the momentum? What is your sense of the scene that you set for us?
Well, lots of activity. Three visits by President Obama in the last 5 days of the campaign. Paul Ryan tomorrow, Mitt Romney on Friday, this past Friday. So a lot of activity, kind of revved up voting base in both parties. The polling has been a little daunting for Mitt Romney. I mean, some of the polls are close, some of them are a little less than close, but, you know, the concerning thing for Republicans is that, you know, in all the polling this fall, Romney's never really been ahead. So, you know, he's got, it's tough to get over the hump for Republicans in the state and presidential races, and it's going to be a challenge for them in this race, because not only has Romney been behind in most of the polling, but Obama's been kind of at or around that 50% mark.
Do you is there a correlation between those numbers and the numbers in your hotly contested U.S. Senate race between former Governor Tommy Thompson and Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin?
Yeah, there is. Now, you know, early in the year, you saw in the polling a lot of ticket splitters because both Thompson was ahead in his race and the favorite in his race. President Obama was ahead in his race. Those two races have kind of converged in the sense that, you know, the Senate flipped during August. Baldwin ahead, and it's a very tight race now. It's kind of a jump ball, but fewer and fewer crossover voters. So they're not going to be cookie-cutter images of each other, but they'll be closer to that than we thought. And the question, I think, for most people watching these two races is, if President Obama wins Wisconsin, you know, how big a Romney deficit can Tommy Thompson survive? Most people think he has the ability and will run a little bit ahead of Romney in the state, but whether, you know, he runs a point ahead of Romney or two or three or four or five, that's kind of unknown.
In a political sense, when you're looking at the state of Wisconsin, there is Milwaukee and the surrounding counties, and then there is the rest of the state. What can you tell us about early voting or any trends or any separation that between those two sections of the state of Wisconsin?
Yeah, the early voting is hard in Wisconsin to interpret because we don't have registration by party, and also we don't even have uniform reporting of early voting, which is really absentee balloting in Wisconsin. So,
and you can register on election day. Is that correct?
And you can register on election day. So what we have is we have some polling in which people who say they've already voted are asked who they voted for. In the polls, Obama has the edge in the early voting. If you look at it by certain geographic areas, there are Republican and Democratic areas that actually produced more early votes than they did in 2008, even though the period for early voting was compressed significantly by a new law. So, you can't really tell too much from the early voting numbers, but in terms of the geography of the state, I mean, the simplest kind of, I think,
I asked this several months ago when you were on the program, but I just want to know whether there's any updated insight that you might provide, because those people listening around the country, when they hear that Wisconsin is either a toss-up state, as has been identified, or recent polls to suggest that the president has a lead there, they say, wait a minute, isn't this the state that just had a recall for a Republican governor and he beat back the onslaught of Democrats and the liberal establishment all over the United States? That mechanism was surprising to a lot of people. You have the chairman of the RNC is from Wisconsin, the former head of the party. You have the vice presidential candidate, a popular congressman from Wisconsin. It seems to me that you've got sort of three superstars and at least the appearance of momentum for Republicanism in Wisconsin. What's wrong here?
Well, that's kind of what makes Wisconsin so interesting, because Republicans do have some positives in this race, but I'd make two or three points. One, Obama won the state by 14 points 4 years ago, so Republicans have a lot of ground to make up in a presidential election. I mean, they've got to close a huge gap. It doesn't happen too often historically. They've closed a lot of it, but still, it's a big, big, in fact, of all the toss-up states, Obama has the biggest winning margin in Wisconsin. It's also voted Democratic for president 6 elections in a row. And third, even in the recall election, in the exit polls, about 18% of the people that voted for Walker said they supported Obama for president. So even if you took the recall electorate, you could argue that that was an electorate that would favor Obama for president, according to the polling. And this is going to be a bigger electorate than the recall electorate because it's a presidential year. So those things are also part of the mix, and I think that helps explain what incongruous reality that Obama is probably the favorite in Wisconsin.
Bob Creamer, our Democrat, has a question for you.
Well, I think what he's saying is borne out by, once again, the New York Times 538 projection is like a 94% odds that Wisconsin will go for Obama. And that's in large measure, I think, because of the both the history but the enormously robust field operation that the Obama campaign has there. I mean, I think the Republicans would like to believe that the field operation the Obama campaign is running in these various states is not as good as it was 4 years ago, very much to the contrary.
Ms. Roebling, our Republicans, got a comment.
Craig, 21 papers have flipped over to Romney, 21 newspapers around the country that endorsed Obama 4 years ago have now flipped over to Romney. And the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, I guess your paper, has decided not to endorse. But I, you could knock me over with a feather when I learned that the State Journal Register out of Madison was endorsing Romney. What's with that? Why is that happening?
Well,
we need 30 seconds, Craig, on this one.
Yeah, it's not as strange as it sounds, because the State Journal has actually, I think it endorsed Bush in both elections and then endorsed Obama. So, people swung to Obama. A lot of people who endorsed Obama last time, had a very mixed partisan history in their endorsement.
On that note, listen, we have got to move on. You want to 5 seconds. You want to pick a winner up there?
Well, I'd just say, I'd rather be in Obama's shoes than Romney's shoes.
Okay, good point. On that note, Craig Gilbert, Washington Bureau Chief of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, joins us. 1-800-723-8029 is the telephone number. We'll take some calls if we can sneak them into our discussion. When we come back, we're going to head west to Colorado. Back shortly. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us now. Let's head west to the great state of Colorado. Eric Sonderman joins us. He is a consultant, and also he is a political analyst for KOA Radio in Denver, one of the country's leading talk radio stations. Eric, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway. Are you there?
I am here.
Good. Terrific. Give us a little scene setter for what's happening in Colorado. Who's got the momentum? What can you tell us about early voting patterns out there and just a general lay of the land?
Sure. Glad to. Thanks for having me on. In terms of what's happening here, everything is happening here. You cannot go anywhere without seeing either a presidential motorcade or a vice presidential motorcade or one of the Republican candidates' motorcades, seemingly. President Obama is back in town today, having just been here on Thursday. Paul Ryan, I believe, is on his third appearance this week. Mitt Romney was here for a major event at a suburban Denver amphitheater last night. It strikes me, this is just my own opinion, that the Obama campaign is regarding Colorado somewhat as their backup firewall. Clearly, Ohio all along has been the firewall. But in case that first firewall burns, I think they are looking to Colorado to be the backup state that perhaps saved their presidency.
Yeah, but you know, the problem with that, Eric, is that here again, the real clear politics average of averages is has Barack Obama in Colorado at just over 48%. Now, the way these things operate, it is unlikely he is going to get more than 50% on election day if he is still getting only 48% today. I mean, people don't break to well-known incumbents.
Well, actually, that's historically not entirely true, Chris. I mean, if you look back at a number of the last past elections, there is not really a trend that you can say undecideds broke for or against an incumbent in these national political campaigns. Let me just say, by the way, about Colorado, I mean, obviously, it's very close, and it is an important firewall from the Obama campaign's point of view, I think. There are two big pluses that Obama has there. One is that a lot of women in Colorado think that he's too extreme on women's issues. And the other is that when it comes to immigration, I mean, Romney says he'll veto the DREAM Act. He praises the Arizona Papers, Please law. I mean, he's been the most anti-immigrant presidential candidate in 50
years. How strong is the Hispanic vote in Colorado? I know it's one of the states where they can make
a
difference.
The Latino vote is certainly a growing vote out here. It strikes me that the Obama campaign, and they've somewhat acknowledged this, we had a very close senatorial election out here 2 years ago. Michael Bennett, then the incumbent, still the incumbent, against a gentleman named Ken Buck. It was a year, obviously, in which Republicans were winning these kinds of races left and right across the country. Bennett succeeded in threading the needle and eking out a very, very narrow victory. And a lot of the Obama campaign, not just in Colorado, but in other states as well, is somewhat modeled after that Bennett campaign. The two linchpins of the Bennett campaign were to maximize Latino turnout. We'll see if Obama can do that on Tuesday. And secondly, to drive that gender gap just as wide open as possible.
Right.
Instead of trying to limit their damage with Republicans among men, instead of trying to limit their damage with men in the Bennett-Buck race, Bennett just tried to go all in and maximize their advantage with women. I think that same thing is happening here. The question is, are the atmospherics different this time? It's going to be a close race, a 1.5 point race either way. It strikes me that just as there's been closing momentum, now maybe that momentum peaked a week ago, but closing momentum for Romney, there is a higher level of Republican intensity here than I've seen in probably 10 years.
But it also seems to me that in the states that at least have been identified as the toss-up states, what is unique about Colorado is that there is the marijuana initiative on the state there, and Gary Johnson has an active campaign there. Could this be the state where a third-party libertarian candidate really affects the outcome?
Oh, wouldn't that be ironic if Gary Johnson becomes Florida and Ralph Nader circa 12 years later? I doubt that. I mean, if this thing is truly razor close, if this is a 3,000 to 5,000 vote margin either way, particularly in Romney's direction, will you be able to make the case that maybe Gary Johnson stole it away from Obama? Yes, you will. If the margin is any size at all, I don't think you'll be able to make that case. Yes, Gary Johnson's running on a marijuana legalization platform. Yes, we have a marijuana legalization ballot measure, but I ultimately don't think that's going to be decisive.
Chris Robley, I want to just ask you a question. Whether it's specifically, it may be unique to Colorado versus other states, but who, in your view, does Gary Johnson take votes away from?
Well, because of the marijuana thing, I think he takes he would conceivably take votes equally or maybe a little bit more from Barack Obama.
In Colorado.
In Colorado. Because of the marijuana legalization issue.
He's running at 5% in Ohio.
So I think what you're looking at there is a situation where, with all respect to the Senate race, which was very artfully done 2 years ago on the Democratic side, there's no question about that. But I think what you want to look at this time is where the independents are going. Because the people who are already identified one way or another, that's not where the final decision is going to be made. And you're going to look at how is Romney doing with independents. And when you see Romney going out there and speaking to 35,000 people, that is a level of support. It's a level of interest and enthusiasm that you haven't seen on the Republican side. And I think that is going to shake up some of these precepts that grounded the Democratic Senate victory 2 years ago. I
think there's a lot to what that gentleman just said. I think what played into the Bennett victory 2 years ago, the Senate victory, was that his opponent was somewhat a willing accomplice in being able to really drive up that gender gap vote, particularly in the Denver suburbs where these elections are won or lost. Mitt Romney, while there be Republicans stepping on their toes in Indiana and Missouri and other places, Romney has not done that kind of self-inflicted damage to himself. And I'd even go a little further. To the extent that there was so much of a drumbeat back during the primary elections that Romney was just a Massachusetts moderate, that he wasn't a true blue conservative, I think it makes it a little bit harder at the margins to stick that ultra-conservative label on him now.
Well, I mean, Romney's the guy who wants to defund Planned Parenthood. He's the guy who supports the Personhood Amendment that would outlaw all forms of abortion and, frankly, would also outlaw a lot of contraception. I mean, he could argue he's twists around in the wind on these questions, but in the end, he's going to be do what the far right in the House of Representatives wants him to do. I mean, this is not a man with a strong
record. You know what? Let me answer that. So be it. Okay. I think what you're looking at, though, is a situation, an issue orientation, where the people who are concerned about those points that you just made, they were voting for Obama anyway. I think what you're going to see in this campaign, what you're going to see on Tuesday night, and I could be wrong, but I think what you're going to see about this is the primacy, what we heard from New Hampshire. Number one, it's jobs and the economy, and number two, it's debt and deficit.
You know, we've seen a lot in the polling, a lot of women who might be prone to that argument,
okay,
who then say, hey, but I just can't bring myself to vote for Mitt Romney and the Republicans and to put them in charge so he can appoint probably two representatives to the United States Supreme Court, new justices who will overturn Roe versus Wade.
Eric, a question back to Colorado. I've got a question for you. One of the reports of yesterday, the vice president was in Colorado when he drew 900 people. Should we read much into that?
I probably wouldn't read a lot into that. This thing is going to be decided among the presidential candidates. I think the vice presidential candidates are just out here ginning up the base. I don't think Colorado may be closer than most other states or even any other state, ultimately the dynamics, I think, are the same, which is Republicans have marginally superior intensity, motivation, passion, and Democrats probably have the marginally superior ground game / organization. And it's going to be a contest between those two. 4 years ago, obviously, was no contest because the Democrats had both. They had the intensity and they had the organization. Here it's a contest. There is no doubt that there are a bunch of suburban women out there who find Mitt Romney just a bridge too far on some of these social issues. The question is, are there enough suburban women who are pro-choice, pro-gay marriage, or at least civil unions, run the list, but in this particular election, you only need a narrow slice of them who are saying, first and foremost, this is about jobs and the economy, and the status quo is not working sufficiently for me. That's the question in my mind.
Right. I think that that also, I think you have summarized, not only is that the slice or the issue in suburban Denver, that is suburbia all over the United States.
Absolutely.
That particular issue, those Republicans, primarily women, who may 4 years ago have gone with Barack Obama for a variety of reasons, how many of those feel comfortable in coming, and they might be Republicans, how many of those might feel comfortable coming back to a party headed by Mitt Romney, and whether or not the addition of Paul Ryan and some of the ways in which he's fought off sort of the harder elements of the Republican right have had an impact on that campaign. And that's the great challenge. You see it that way?
That is the challenge in 48 hours or maybe a little more, maybe 60, but we're going to know soon enough.
Well, is either candidate going back to Colorado before it's over?
The president is here tonight for a major rally in Aurora. He has Dave Matthews as his opening act. I'm not aware of either Romney or Obama being here tomorrow. Paul Ryan is coming back to Douglas County, which is a highly, highly Republican county just to the south of Denver, between Denver and Colorado Springs.
Eric, we're out of time. We've got to move on.
Thank
you very much for joining us, Eric Soderman. He is the political analyst for KOA Radio. When we come back, we're going to go to the Big O, Ohio. That's where it's going to happen. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. In the studio as our Democrat this evening, we have Bob Creamer, and our Republican is Chris Roebling. And Chris Roebling, you're going to be, where are you? You're going to be all over the place on election night, right?
Well, I'll be,
be everywhere.
I'll be in a friendly, competitive AM radio station here in Chicago.
And you're going to be all over the television tube.
I'll be around
the next couple of hours.
Television, yeah, we'll be doing that too.
All right. We should also mention, by the way, that this coming Thursday night, at 7 o'clock on WYCC, our flagship station, I'll be participating in a WYCC post-election special. So we hope that you can tune that in from 7 to 8 p.m. on Thursday night here in Chicago on WYCC TV 20. We now head to the state that everyone has been focusing on. Let's head to the great Buckeye State of Ohio. Matt Bruning joins us. Matt is a reporter with WTVN in Columbus. And Matt, nice to have you with us tonight on Beyond the Beltway.
Well, pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
We should also mention that he has been named a Reporter of the Year for 4 or 5 years in a row in that great state. So we've got someone who's got his ear to the ground in a state that everybody is spending more time there. My question to you is, at this moment, as I've asked everyone, set the scene. Is there anything you can give us about momentum, emotion, crowd turnouts, and how often will either the president or Mitt Romney visit Ohio before the polls close on Tuesday night?
Well, the president is in Cincinnati right now doing a rally down there. Both are expected to be in Columbus tomorrow. In fact, President Obama will be at Nationwide Arena, which is a pretty big arena in downtown Columbus. He's going to be there with Jay-Z and Bruce Springsteen for an afternoon rally. And then Mitt Romney will rally out near the airports in the evening with the Marshall Tucker Band. So both these guys pulling out some musical talent to try to help draw some crowd. But
yeah, we're getting an insight into the concert tours in our discussions around the country tonight. But go ahead.
By the time it's all said and done, 83 visits by the presidential candidates to Ohio this year. That is a record, at least as far as I know, to the Buckeye State. So this place has been battleground central since this election kind of took off. And you asked about crowd sizes. I know Mitt Romney held a rally Friday evening down in Westchester, which is near Cincinnati. And we've heard a couple of different numbers on the crowd size. I mean, they've ranged from anywhere from 18,000 to as much as 30,000, according to a fire official down there. So big crowds there. Again, I would imagine at least 10,000 probably if he fills Nationwide Arena for the president tomorrow in Columbus. So Big crowds are coming out to
What are the newspaper polls around the state saying? And specifically, we should mention for those listening around the country, Matt is from Columbus. Columbus is the capital. Columbus is also the largest city in Ohio. It's not Cleveland. It is Columbus. Tell us about where the polls amongst the newspapers are and TV stations.
Well, they've been very, very close all the way across the board. In fact, the latest one that came out is from the Columbus Dispatch. And that came out today, and it shows President Obama leading Mitt Romney 50-48%, but the margin of error in that poll is 2.2 percentage points, so it's still within the margin of error. Really, it's a toss-up. I mean, no matter who you talk to, it is a very, very, very close race here in Ohio. Early voting, by the way, was for the weekend, began now. This is the first weekend they've had early in-person voting. And all over the state today, we've been getting reports of very, very, very long lines. I think I was reading one place in Cincinnati, about a 3.5 hour wait in line, about 1.5 hour wait in Columbus. So that's advantaged the president. The president usually turns out, the Democrats usually turn out for that early in-person voting we've seen in Ohio historically. So turnout is going to be a big, big factor in this.
How were the voters? Responding to the focus that they have. I mean, clearly, every voter in Ohio probably is, if they haven't met a candidate, they certainly have seen the television spots or billboard ads. I mean, how do they feel about being, I mean, both candidates are sort of groveling around the state. How is the electorate responding to that?
Have you seen that video of the little girl on Colorado that's crying, that she's tired of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney? That's Ohio. Every single person I've talked to in Ohio has said, I identify with that kid. Yeah, they're tired of it. I mean, you know, it's been grueling. You can't watch a football game without just being blasted with political ads. You can't watch the Home and Garden channel, it seems, without seeing political ads. I mean, people here are they can't wait for November 7th. Let's put it that way.
Chris Roebling is our Republican. He has a question for you.
Well, I want to go back to the early voting. I think what I understand is that the Republican voting went up more than 100,000 votes, and the Democratic voting had gone down by about 150,000 votes. And between the two of them, they had that represented wiping out the Barack. That was a shift that was greater than the margin by which Obama won the state in 2008. Not to say that Romney's definitively going to win, but it showed a lot more Republican participation in the early voting and less enthusiasm on the Democratic side. Now, are you tracking with that?
You know, when I look at these rallies and I look at what's happening around the state of Ohio, I would agree with you that it seems like there is more enthusiasm among Republicans this year than there was 4 years ago. I think 4 years ago, I just got the sense from the beginning that John McCain was not going to win Ohio. It was a lock. And I don't know if that was partially because of the very competitive primary we saw between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama or what it was. But there was just, for me personally, it seemed like 4 years ago, there was no question how Ohio was going to go from the beginning. This year, it's just been so toss-up, so back and forth, so evenly split, and there has been a ton more enthusiasm in the state from the GOP than there was 4 years ago. So, yeah, I mean, we're seeing these early voting numbers come in, and I'm only going on historical reference of typically the early voting in person in Ohio has favored Democrats. Talk about the mail-in absentee ballots.
Now, also, tell us about that, because I understand that the provisional ballots, it seems to me of all the states that I've heard about, Ohio maybe has the most cockamamie election consideration, is that you can come in with a provisional ballot if you've voted absentee and you want to change your mind and come in and vote in person. It sets in motion a rather complicated system, does it not?
Yeah, the provisional ballot thing was, and I'm not sure why they originally came up with it, but there's a couple of different things that would get you a provisional ballot. Like, for example, and this just recently came out of a court case here in Ohio, that if you show up at the wrong polling place, the wrong precinct, you can still vote provisional. And what that does is basically you cast a ballot. Board of Elections can't count those ballots for 10 days. And in that 10 days, they try to validate that you are indeed a registered voter that is supposed to be voting. You also mentioned, you know, there's a million different things that could come up. Like, let's say, like you mentioned, that I voted absentee by mail and I've decided, oh, I want to change my mind. I mean, that's...
Yeah, but the provisional ballots are not counted until November 17th.
Correct.
So it's possible. It is possible if we're as close as we were in 2000, it's or even 4 years, even 8 years ago with the John Kerry campaign. I mean, it could be so close in Ohio, we might not know until the 17th of November when the state must certify its results.
Well, and you're being very kind with that date. I actually did a story last week on the quote unquote worst case scenario that could play this out into December, actually. In Ohio, if it is that close, they go provisional ballots, they recount them, or they count those provisional ballots, and then if it's even closer and they have to do a mandatory recount in Ohio, Ohio law says you have to do a mandatory recount if it's within 0.25% of the vote. Mm. The margin is 0.25%.
Matt, our Democrats got a comment for you or a question.
So, yeah. Matt, here's the first off, in terms of the polling has shown that of those who've already voted, you know, Democrats have the president has a substantial lead.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what the polling shows of those who say they've voted already. And it's a large measure because the Obama campaign succeeded in making this a choice and not a referendum as it wished to. I mean, there are two big issues, Matt, it seems to me, that have just really caused that to happen. One is the auto rescue that they that Romney, of course, opposed and is so important to people in Ohio. The other is his record at Bain. I'm talking about Romney's record at Bain Capital that the Obama campaign was able to burn in during the summertime in a very effective kind of way. And that's why it seems to me. I mean, you say it's close. It's close terms of percentage terms, but of the 21 battleground polls in Ohio in the last 2 weeks. Only two Romney has won, one has been tied, and 18 Obama has won. I mean, the odds are really good that the president will take Ohio. And with Ohio, along with Wisconsin and Nevada, I mean, that's the ballgame.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I think, as we said at the beginning of the program, is that as Romney perhaps internal polls show him, confirming what you just said, that things may be tight there, that he has to look elsewhere, and that may be one of the reasons why he's expanding his campaign to going into Pennsylvania and western Pennsylvania. Listen, on that note, Matt Bruning, we are out of time. We thank you very much for giving us your insight into Ohio. It was with WTVN in Columbus. And when we come back, we're not through with Ohio yet. We're going to head to Mahoning County in the northeast region, and we're going to find out what the listeners of WKBN in Youngstown have to say about the next president of the United States, because they'll probably be able to pick them. Back shortly. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, thank you very much for being with us tonight. If you have been a regular listener to this program, you know that whenever we have done a program from our affiliate WKBN in Youngstown, Ohio, I have said that that region is crucial to the next president of the United States. And if you draw a circle around Youngstown, Ohio, about a 250-mile circle around that city, that is where the next president of the United States is going to be decided. And as we are doing our final broadcast before this election, I stand by that prediction because it is what happens in Ohio. And certainly we heard early in the program what is happening in the state of Pennsylvania or might happen in the state of Pennsylvania. And if the state of Pennsylvania were to shift into the Republican column, it would be because of huge votes, I would assume, not only in the suburban Philadelphia area, but also in western Pennsylvania that's a little more conservative than eastern Pennsylvania. Joining us now is Bertrand D'Souza. He's been a regular guest on this program for it's about our fourth presidential election campaign that we've done interviews with him. He is the longtime columnist and editorial writer for The Vindicator in Youngstown, Ohio. Bertrand, nice to have you back with us on Beyond the Beltway.
Nice to talk to you, Bruce. It's always a pleasure.
One of the things that has been mentioned on some of the national programs in recent days is that the president appears to be doing better with white men in Ohio than in other states, and everyone is focusing it on the auto bailout. I want to get your sense as to whether or not your gut tells you that, your reporting indicates that, as we head towards Election Day.
All right, let's put this in perspective. I have focused almost exclusively for the last couple of months on the white male blue-collar worker, because in 2010, in that election where Republicans swept everything, in Ohio, a lot of those voters who had voted for Obama in 2008 either stayed home or they voted for John Kasich, the Republican. Thereby, the Democratic governor at the time, Ted Strickland, lost the election by a sliver. And I have looked at the numbers and crunched the numbers, and I felt and concluded that in the Mahoning Valley, the Youngstown area, Mahoning and Trumbull counties, heavily Democratic areas that that statewide Democrats absolutely need to win statewide, they were the ones who stayed home. And I found it ironic, and I've been writing about this consistently, that a lot of those blue-collar workers work at GM's Lordstown plant, one of the showcase plants of GM that was rescued, that was came out of the bailout. GM has invested hundreds of millions of dollars in that plant. And those are the people who sort of stayed home. And I've been asking the question, what are they going to do this year? I'm still hearing there's a concern among the UAW, there's concern among union leaders that these blue-collar workers, males especially, white males, will not deliver the kind of vote that Obama needs to come out of the Mahoning Valley of Mahoning and Trumbull counties with at least, with more than 70% of the with at least 65 to 68% of the vote in order to have a good chance statewide. And I'm still trying to figure it out. In fact, I spoke to a union guy this afternoon who was telling me that a relative of his who works at GM, who got his job because of the bailout, told him almost boastfully that he was going to vote for, that he had voted for Romney. And this person who's also a public employee just went nuts and said, you know, what's going on here? And this guy said, well, you know, I started the job and I only got paid $14 an hour. Well, he's now making $20 an hour, but he doesn't give Obama any of that credit. And I think that's where my concern is.
Bertrand, you told us a very similar story when we were there during the primary many, many months ago, and I have referenced that comment on numerous occasions, and so I wanted to make sure, as we are now, you know, less than a little over 48 hours away from voting, whether or not you still feel that way, but you still feel that way strongly.
The great unknown in Ohio today is the white male blue-collar worker, whether or not that person is going to come back and deliver, especially given what Obama has done, not only with the auto industry, which is very important to the Mahoning Valley because of Lordstown, but also the steel industry. We've got a steel plant the French are building, spending almost $1 billion. And Obama went after the Chinese on steel. The tire industry. There are all kinds of things that the president has done.
Bertram, would you say, because we only have a minute left, but would you say that the demographic area that you're talking about, which is northeast Ohio, would you say that that spills maybe a couple of hundred miles into western Pennsylvania, and you're really talking about the same type of person culturally and politically?
Very, very same kind of demographic. very same kind of demographic, and then therefore, that's why Romney is focusing on Pennsylvania, because he thinks not only can he get the suburban voters in the Philadelphia area, as you alluded to, but he also thinks he has a chance with white blue-collar workers in western PA, heavily industrialized areas like Mahoning Valley. So I think that's what the Republicans are counting on, that there's this, these white males are going to sort of look around and say, well, even if Obama did something for the auto industry, we still don't think that he deserves
it. Bertrand D'Souza, we are out of time for tonight's show and for this campaign. I thank you very much. That is a significant piece of information. When people are talking about what's happening in Ohio, they're going to be looking into that vote. So remember what Bertrand had to say. And at this particular point, we're at the point where all of our guests, including myself, we're going to make our prediction. Bob Kramer, you are the Democrat. Make your prediction on electoral votes. Who wins? And give us an electoral college
vote. I think the president will win. I think probably the best odds for an electoral court vote victory is 309. That includes all of the 243 electoral votes he has, plus Nevada.
309. We're not going to get into specific. 309 okay. For Obama. Chris Roebling, give me yours.
291. And that is for Mitt Romney.
For who?
Mitt Romney wins with 291 electoral
okay,
votes.
Okay, ready? Here's my prediction. Romney, 271. 271. One over what is needed. That's my prediction. We are out of time for this week and this campaign. Until next week when we'll be discussing it all, I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night.